Well, when Mark called me months and months ago to put together this talk, he'd obviously given it a considerable amount of thought, and I actually had in the past 7 or 8 months as well, and really hadn't worked a lot with reproduction since I left Georgia. When I first got there, I sat down with Dr. Bertrand. He told me this is what your dissertation is going to be, is female fertility, and I wrote what I thought was a really nice literature review, and about the time I got that done, we shifted off to some more bioinformatic type things for some of the issues that I'm going to explain today. I'm curious of those in the audience, how many would like a genetic evaluation for reproduction or like a better one than what they have right now? Okay. It's important. Reproduction is the most important category of traits that we have. Right? Growth doesn't matter if we fail to breed. Carcass certainly doesn't matter if we fail to breed. But for whatever reason, we have failed to deliver across the board a national cattle evaluation for female reproduction. And the suite of EPDs we have, it is really the whole, and there's a lot missing there. So what this really spurs from, last December, the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium had a symposium on genetics of reproduction. And so several talks regarding research work that's going on in the field, as you can imagine, a lot of genomics work, and I think right now, concurrently, Milt Thomas is probably talking about some of that in another room. Historical research that had been done in the area, the economics of it, and what it was designed to do was to leave there with action points what we need to do to bring this to fruition. And I think, and I'll take a lot of the blame for that, we didn't leave there with the action points that I hoped we would. And so I think maybe in part Mark asked me to give this talk so I can in some way redeem myself and set forth some direction. So I didn't design this to be an extensive review of everything that had been done and get up here and wow the audience and bore actually the majority of you with a whole lot of survival analysis or my knowledge of modeling threshold traits or things of that nature, but rather to sit out what I think is a very doable plan for a national cattle evaluation for female fertility. So to give you just a little bit of recap of that symposium that was held last December in Denver, during one of the meals we got people together, okay, forced people to visit, and asked them to come up with what they felt were candidate traits that we should explore to put into national cattle evaluation for female fertility. And I've listed a few here. One would be weaning success. Okay, so think of it as instead of calving success, take it out further in the life cycle, and did she wean a calf or not? And I think that's appealing to some people because they believe that's economically relevant to them, right? It's not just did she have a live calf, it's did she actually wean one. But here's the issue with that. There's a lot of noise, okay, in terms of coming up with just calving success or heifer pregnancy. Let's drag that out to weaning, and there becomes even more noise. I haven't run something like that, but I would be surprised if we would get heritability estimates much above zero. That becomes the issue. Another one was first service conception rather than heifer pregnancy. And I actually have worked some with first service conception, or I called it first insemination success. And that can work really well in AI data. Hey, it's nice because not only did we know she got pregnant, but certainly there's economic benefits for her getting pregnant early on in the breeding season. Come weaning, her calf is going to wean up more. She has more time to involute and get back in rig, so to speak, to breed the next time. Here's the problem, though, as we go to natural service data. How do you actually know when she got pregnant? Did she get pregnant in that first 21 days? Did she get pregnant in the next 21 days? That becomes an issue. If she got pregnant on day one when the bulls were turned out, we can pretty much sort that out. Okay? If she got pregnant on day 60, we can sort that out. But there's a very fuzzy period in there in between those that's challenging. And there's some methodologies that can help account for that. But I think as we look about something that's plausible to put into NCE right now with methodology and software that we have available, I'm not sure that that's it. And the group would laugh at me when I told you about the methodology to account for that uncertainty. It's called fuzzy logic. My colleagues at UNL still laugh that I ever dealt with something called fuzzy logic. Another is postpartum interval, and there's no doubt that that's important. But I think as we go through some of the other traits that have been proposed and some that I would propose, postpartum interval is inherently included in those. So some limitations that came out of that meeting that people thought, this is why we're not where we want to be in regards to an evaluation for these type of traits. One brought up by some breed associations were guidelines for recording phenotypes. When really is her first opportunity to breed? Things of that nature. Collection of phenotypes. Now, depending on whether you're the breeder or the breed association, some breed association may say we're not getting the phenotypes, not only quantity, but quality that we need. And some breeders would say, depending on breed again, we're not being asked to report those. And then return on investment. Those phenotypes do come at an expense to collect, and so some were concerned about that. But I would argue that if we stick with the simple things that every producer is recording anyway, and we structure it such that there's a pipeline to get that to the breed association, really I don't think there's an added cost to it. So a brief review on traits, and I said I wouldn't belabor this review, and so obviously this isn't exhaustive in terms of every single trait that has ever been proposed. But believe me, there's a lot of them. I believe Kamak, Enns, and Thomas, Milt Thomas, published a review paper on this topic in Professional Animal Scientist, I believe, that came out earlier in the year. If you want to go through and perhaps get a more exhaustive list of the traits that have been proposed, one would be days to calving. So the number of days between a breeding attempt and then a calving event. And the nice thing about days to calving is that it's continuous in nature. Right? So many of the reproductive traits that we deal with are either categorical or threshold. Right? And they're threshold because we don't know what that underlying variable is that creates the response we want to see. If we did, we might just measure that. Think about it in the context of carcass traits, right? We have a genetic evaluation for marbling. We don't have a genetic evaluation for choice or select. And those people that run NCE in this room, I'm sure much prefer a genetic evaluation for marbling than they prefer a genetic evaluation for choice or select, right? If we can avoid threshold traits, we're going to avoid them. But the problem is sometimes that's not possible. The one problem with days to calving is, though, is we can get censored records. Right? If she doesn't calve, what is her value for days to calving? And there's been different things that have been proposed for that. As I take you through, I think there's perhaps an approach where we can help alleviate that problem. One would be heifer pregnancy, and there are some evaluations for that now. Called heifer pregnancy, it's more calving success, I would argue. So pregnancy is determined by, did she drop a calf? Okay? Now that's one of those threshold traits. And the danger with threshold traits, one of the dangers is a problem called ECP, or extreme category problems. So that's when you turn in a contemporary group, and they're all ones. They all got pregnant. And you're thinking, my evaluation for those are going to be great. And no, because they're going to get kicked out. The reason is, there's no variation. We can't get solutions for the fixed effects. I say that. There's some neat tricks we could do. We could insert a pseudo record, create some variation, get solutions for the fixed effects. Right? But that becomes a problem. First insemination success, or calving to first insemination, I mentioned that. With natural service data, we have uncertainty in the responses that we see. We don't know if it was actually the first attempt or if it was the second attempt. So that creates issues. And not that methodology doesn't exist to account for it, but in terms of actually implementing it, perhaps a bit more challenging right now. Longevity. Okay, or stayability, that's something we have, and I think a good thing to start with that we have in national cattle evaluations. One problem, though, and it came up in the meeting last December, is the data that comes into breed associations perhaps not as descriptive as what we'd like to see, and that comes in terms of reason for culling. It would seem that the majority of females that leave purebred herds leave for other, okay? And that becomes a problem. We'd like to know why they left instead of just other. Age at puberty, of course, one that's been around and talked about for a long time. And then other things that have come up are indicator traits, things that are perhaps just a bit more removed from what we actually see in terms of pregnant, open, things like that. One that's been worked on at UNL and US Mark would be something like antral follicle count, okay? Number of follicles on the ovary related in terms to her ability to get pregnant and stay in the herd. And I think those are very researchable ideas, but the cost of data collection, the feasibility of data collection, I really think doesn't make that plausible. So the other thought, right, is that molecular technology is going to handle this problem for us. And the previous speaker actually alluded to the very point that I'd like to make with this, is that in the case of no data or very sparse data, molecular information isn't our savior. We need phenotypes, right? We need phenotypes. And I struggle with the thought of not having a national cattle evaluation in place for female reproduction and thinking that fitting MBVs is going to help us, because not only do we need phenotypes in place for a lot of reasons, but we're going to constantly need to retrain the information that we have. And so currently there are commercial products out there for female reproduction traits, but to my knowledge, for one, no validation has ever been requested for those. There are several NBCEC projects that are focused on female reproduction. I can hear Milt talking about one of them right now, and that's just one of a suite of about three. But I'm not confident that those projects are going to give us something that we can implement right away in all breeds for national cattle evaluation, although there's no doubt they're going to further our knowledge considerably. So the argument I'm trying to make is that I don't think we can just sit back and wait for that technology. I think we need to put a national cattle evaluation in place with the information that we have right now. So, and if I forgot your breed on here for these two traits, it's not intended. But we have several breeds that would have an evaluation currently for stayability or longevity. And then we'd also have some heifer pregnancy, although to my knowledge at least, Angus's heifer pregnancy is more still in kind of an R&D phase right now than it is actually going through national cattle evaluation and everyone getting heifer pregnancy breeding values back. So some current limitations as I see it, and there are limitations, but they're not insurmountable at all. One fundamental one, I think, is getting the correct information so that we can contemporary group females correctly. If we just have yearling weight contemporary groups and we're asked to do something with female fertility, we can't do it, at least not without creating a lot of bias inherently, right? Because if they didn't come up pregnant as first or as heifers, we don't know if that's because they actually were open or they never even got a breeding opportunity. So we really need better information in terms of contemporary groups, and then quality of data, particularly in terms of why they leave the herd. It would be nice to know exactly when they left and for what reason. Was it fertility related, or was it production related, or was it because they were the wrong color, or because they had horns, whatever it was, because we're forced to make some gross assumptions there. And so I think really it's more terms of both quality of data and quality of data. So some suggestions on what we can do to fix some of those problems in terms of contemporary grouping. And I said that yearling contemporary groups aren't sufficient. But what we need to know is, did she receive a breeding opportunity? Did you try to AI her? Was a bull turned out with her? We need to know when that occurred. Okay, when the breeding attempt occurred. When did you turn bulls out? It'd be nice to know the service sires, and then also a breeding group, a group of females that ran together during the breeding season. And I say this isn't insurmountable because that's information that every seed stock producer collects. I mean, you've got that information. And so what we need to do is find out or determine a reasonable way to get that to a breed association and into NCE so we can actually group those animals correctly. So the traits that I would suggest that we start with, and some have one of these already, that's heifer pregnancy, right? It's threshold, yes, no. Did she drop a calf? And then also days to calving. I think there's certainly economic benefit to that. And these two are actually strongly genetically correlated, in a negative fashion, though. Decreased days to calving, increased the probability of getting pregnant, right? But that genetic correlation is actually very beneficial. Because days to calving, as I said again, two of the benefits is, one, we know they conceived, and they did so early on in the breeding season if they have a good genetic or a good prediction for that. So I think we can use these two traits with information that's already collected by breeders, run a bivariate analysis, and come up with genetic predictions that can go through NCE. And I actually think that plan is very, very workable. And I'm a bit confused as to why it's not done across the board right now. So action points, as I see it for the breed associations, if we don't do so already, we need to ask for the correct information so we can contemporary group these animals right. And really, whole herd reporting is extremely beneficial. Now, whether that's mandatory or if there's a sufficient incentive or penalty, I'm not sure what the right answer is to that. But I think it's going to be critical to get reliable evaluations for these traits. The action points for the breeders, we've got to collect and record phenotypes, and you collect them already, right? You know. You know when you turn bulls out. You know who was pregnant, who was open. You know those things, right? We've just got to get them into a more usable format. And correct contemporary grouping of animals is critical. I think we also need to concentrate on a specific reason for culling so we can diminish that other category. And then we also need to know a birth date of calves, even if the calf died, right? So if the calf died during parturition, she still had a calf. And you can still enter that information. And you don't have to register it, okay? But we'd still like you to enter that information. The breeds might like you to still register it, but you don't have to. So my plan wasn't to be very complicated, but to set out, because I think it really is that simple, a plan to put to work where we could actually make this happen. And so I'm hoping for discussion, particularly if there's breed reps in here, as to what they think the limitations are and for what some of the breeders may think the limitations are, so we can put some plan to work. So with that, I'd open it up for any questions. Yes, sir. I think we you bring up some good points, but I think we need to start with the things that fundamental things to get us there. And service sire, if we included that, that alleviates a lot of the questions you just had in terms of quality of semen, bull, things like that. AI technician, yeah, if we want to further split up contemporary groups, we could put AI technician as something, but I'm not sure that we want to do that, particularly right now. We could have some pretty small contemporary groups to begin with, and I guess I'm a bit hesitant to go ahead and start slicing those up even further. But your questions about quality of semen, about breeding ability of the bull, including service sire into that as a covariate, I think handles those questions. Yes, sir. Yeah, and so, again, you know, if you're going through in a contemporary group of females and you're putting in 50 straws of Midian focus, right, and we know Midian Focus was the service sire, then that's about the best we can do, right? That's about the best that we can do. I think the other question was maybe in a contemporary group if you use two or three AI technicians. But again, I think before we get bogged down with caveats like that, I think there are things that we can put to work now. But yeah, if we have good contemporary grouping, a lot of the management issues take care of itself. Yes, sir.
I appreciate your recommendation to start the effort presidency and effort sharing days. I recognize the benefit of you keeping that simple. On the other hand, there is the benefit of the power of repeated reference. And we noticed this, of course, in the election.
I would completely agree, and I kept calling it heifer pregnancy, but it could just be pregnancy. And Dazed Academy, of course, could occur every year. So I completely agree. And those two traits are something that we could do that with very easily. John? It could be done by, you could have parity differences. Mark.
So I think ideally what we'd like to have is the traits of the heifer is one set of traits. Probably the traits of the 2-year-old is another set of traits. Traits after that is a third thing. Because we also know that in the 2-year-old records, that's where we're going to get our best measure of the effect of postpartum anesthetics and problems that the first half efforts have been getting addressed. And so, you know, it's a little bit for us today to think about seeing 6 traits in the model is a little bit daunting. But there's really not any. I can appreciate Matt's approach of let's get the heifer thing done first. A lot of these already have, at least the heifer traits is a great part of it. But let's immediately start working on getting the data on those substance parities. And then we've got years and years to sort out how's the best way to analyze that. But we can't do anything
And you mentioned six trait models, Mark. We have evaluations that do that now.
You know. But
yeah. Yes, sir. Well, so you bring up management practices, and that's the importance of contemporary grouping. We're going to assume when we're able to form a contemporary group, they were under the same synchronization protocol. Mark, you want to say something?
Yeah, no, I think you have an excellent point. It's not just that the heritability is different, it's just that actually different traits. Picked up on it is that cedars will actually induce estrus in the cows that are marginal as far as cycling. It's a really great point. And the really simple answer to it is we treat breeding records that are synchronized with cedars as a different trait than those that were not. And maybe that means we have a 12-trait model instead of a 6-trait model. But I mean, conceptually, that's the right thing to do. It's an excellent.
I guess I was going to ask a question to the breed folks that are in the room. What are the limitations to you guys? Angus is in the corner, I think. Maybe they left.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. His comment was that those breeds and breeders that are already using whole herd reporting have most of this information. They're already submitting most of the information, and it's really a matter of just making some adjustments to the reporting formats to collect the rest of it, like the contemporary group effects and the culling reasons. And I guess I would like to just clarify that I think the culling reasons would be great. Really, the culling reasons, though, are more for getting an evaluation of longevity than they are for the evaluation of reproductive traits. They probably help some in the evaluation of reproductive traits, but they're really critical for the longevity component. I'd like to see us go after both if we're going to try it. But again, let's do anything if we can just get something done. And so if the culling reasons are the big hang up, then let's get on with doing the reproductive part of it.
The point would be is to make this work doesn't require really collection of anything that's not being collected already. It's just the transfer of that information from breeder to breed association. There's hiccups there. And so I guess maybe I make things far too simple, but I was glad to hear you say the same thing. I don't think it's complex to make that transition, and we could have an evaluation. Yes. Honestly, it would depend on the herd. I mean, truthfully. But I think we need to collect what data we can and as much as we can now. But is it going to require 100% of Angus breeders? No. Not honestly.
Every trait that we have right now started out with a small percentage of the breeders contributing data. And, it'll take a while, but the ones who contribute data will have EPDs for reproductive traits. And if customers are interested in those EPDs, the degree of reporting will just increase over time, and it'll come. And, you don't have to have mandatory whole herd reporting in a breed association to make it work. If it's voluntary, then those who want the EPDs will contribute to whole herd reporting, and those who don't can go about business as usual. But an excellent question. But mature weight, scrotal circumference, separate pregnancy rate, all these other traits that we have started out with a small proportion of breeders contributing. And if you really think about it, and especially going back to Mike's presentation, what proportion of breeders in any breed have ever contributed any carcass data? And I think we have a pretty decent genetic evaluation based on for carcass traits. So obviously that's helped by ultrasound and other things, but thanks for your question. I think it's worth doing.
So the benefactors are the people that do it.